Senator Elton, Senator Phillips, Senator Green, Chairman Ward are in attendance. First item on today's agenda is House Bill 133. The sponsor is here. Would you care to give us an overview of the bill, sir?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for giving me an opportunity to present to you House Bill 133. Mr. Chairman, there's quite a number of people in Alaska that want smaller government, more efficient government, less expensive government, certainly more local control, and they value privatization. I'm happy to say that House Bill 133 does encourage that. What it does in a nutshell, it says that if you have a local service area, particularly focused on road service areas, that is to be absorbed, combined with another service area, that there simply has to be a majority vote of both entities. It seems as if that is such a common sense fairness issue that we shouldn't even have to address it. However, what is fair varies with who does the defining, and sometimes larger entities that want to take over smaller entities, some would call it a hostile takeover, think that just one majority ought to do, and that the enclosement or the majority that's about to be absorbed shouldn't have an equal vote. Obviously, I disagree with that. It does have a serious impact on my district, where we have a number of local road service areas. Road service areas that provide the level of service that the local people want and is paid for by them very willingly taxing themselves to that level of service. And frequently they brag by hiring private contractors, they're getting better service and a quicker response than occurs with governmental services, simply because if the contractor isn't providing what they want, they fire them and hire somebody else. Another portion of this bill addresses more efficiency in government, and that is that in Fairbanks particularly, I think they have some 200 road service areas, and in many cases they would like to consolidate those to achieve administrative savings. This bill will allow that consolidation, but yet allow them to continue to tax themselves at differential rates. For instance, if road service area B has a number of developed roads and has decided by their local citizens that they want a higher level of maintenance, they of course pay higher taxes. If road service X that would want to combine with them has a lower level of service and wishes to maintain that and be taxed at a lower level, those two entities can be combined, save administrative overhead costs, but continue to pay the same level of assessment they were paid before the combination. I know for a number of years Fairbanks has been very concerned about the administrative nightmare of 200 entities, and they would like to have some consolidation. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would be available for questions.
Good. We have eight people that have signed up on teleconference that would like to testify on this bill. And before I go from that, I also noticed that Mayor John Williams is in the audience. And will you be able to see her for a while, or is your time permitted?
What I'd like to do is hear a little bit of teleconference.
Okay. All right. Are there any questions? Are you going to be able to stay, Representative Bunyan?
I'll stay here with you.
Okay. And if there's permission of Senator Phillips.
Representative Bunyan, you've got one little item in your opening statement. Some people prefer no government.
Well, yes, that is true. And I suppose if we could put those all in one service area, that would be more effective, too.
I like it.
On the hillside.
All right, very good. Thank you very much, Representative. If you could please stand by here while we go through the teleconferences. First, if we have this correct, first person to sign up would be in Fairbanks. Randy Claydine or Condell, are you there?
Here's Clint Daniel.
Pronounce your last name again for me, please.
Clint Daniel.
Clint Daniel, thank you. Randy, if you could please give your testimony on House Bill 133.
Yes, I've been the road commissioner out of the Airway Road Service Area in North Pole, Alaska for the last 8 or 9 years. And we've charged us all since 1982 1.25 mils all this time. There's a subdivision going into the south of us that's already contacted me to be annexed. And, of course, they have used different kind of material, and we have D1. And I don't think it's fair overall that one road service area can annex to the other. I think both sides ought to agree to this marriage. And also, I think the new coming in the road service area should have some kind of an additional mill rate to offset it for a period of time.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Bundy.
If I might, just to clarify my understanding, I believe then you support HB 133 that would require a vote of both entities and allow differential taxation?
Oh, definitely, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions of the committee members? Senator Phillips?
This is more for my education. Randy, in your area, you just have 1 point something mils for maintenance and operation of your roads. Is that correct?
That's correct. 1.25 mils.
Okay, and do you have a capital fund as well? I'm leading up to something. In the Chugach Igor area, we have a road service area. We have one, I think it's 1.1 mils for maintenance and operation, and then we have another mill for capital.
No, this is a combined 1.25, and that's for any anything that we need as far as capital improvement or maintaining current.
So your 1.25 is both capital and maintenance.
That is correct.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Any other questions at this time? Thank you very much for your testimony. The next person that we have signed up is Mike Pratt in Fairbanks. Are you there, sir?
I'm here. Thank you.
Please give your testimony on House Bill 133.
Yes, I'm on the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly, and we are in favor of this bill. There's a Representative Bundy mentioned quite a few of the advantages to it, some of the things that he didn't mention, other than just the basic concept of giving citizens the right to decide their own destiny, if you will. We find quite often that if a existing service area is being, if you will, compelled to accept a new service area without the ability to vote on it, that their only recourse is to come before the assembly and object to the assembly for the creation. And we've learned quite a bit about why Fairbanks has so many different service areas. And some of the advantages is some of our smaller service areas create, in effect, a little neighborhood, and it gives the neighbors an excuse to come together and meet to solve a problem a couple of times a year, and that has strengthened our neighborhoods and has been a very nice side benefit of that. And we also find up here that people seem to be willing to pay for the service if they can see that they're getting something from that. And in our experience, it appears that, we've had some instances this last winter, we've had heavy snowfalls, and the road service area roads seem to get plowed before even the state highway. I know in my case, we don't have a road service area. We've got people just with their own equipment do it. And we plowed the road as the snow fell, and it took over 2 weeks to get the state-maintained highways plowed. This was out along the Badger Road and Petey Road area. And the same thing is happening in town in the city of Fairbanks. It gets so large that they're not getting the job done. And in the road service areas, people get together, they accept and they provide a much higher level of service. And for the most part, they seem to be, well, they are willing to tax themselves. They have more control over it. So it works good. And we like the concept of establishing service areas. Now, what this bill does is it protects existing service areas, and it also gives the service areas the ability to set differential rates within one service area. So if there is a service area that would experience some advantages with combining from another, then this bill would allow the assembly to make that connection and still maintain fairness. So we think that it'll improve the overall operation of the service area concept quite a bit.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of the committee members at this time? Hearing none, we've also had an additional four people sign up. Mr. Mike Kraft, are you in Fairbanks? Are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Would you care to give your testimony in House Bill 133, please?
Yes, sir. I'm here representing my sister, who is a service area commissioner for Chino Point Heights service area here in Fairbanks. But I'm also here because I'm a developer in Fairbanks and have had to deal with this whole system for the last 20 years, more or less. And there's a couple of comments I'd like to bring forward that maybe could be considered while you guys are looking at this whole service area issue. And the first one that I'd like for you to consider is why is it that a property owner who is being levied a tax rate not have the ability to vote on that, first of all? In other words, if you don't live in that service area, I happen to live in the next lot over from my new service area, and I have the biggest stake of all in what the subdivision does and how good of a service area it has, but yet I can't vote on it, even though I'm paying $2 million on a couple million dollars, and I can't even vote. And so that part of it bothers me. I think you should consider that. I'd also like for you to think about the borough as a whole and the fact that road powers issue has been kind of a thorn that nobody wants to talk about. And there are situations in the borough right now that the borough could come forward as a municipality and assist service areas in the acquisition of right-of-way, because there are lots of spots in Fairbanks where the road right-of-ways weren't wide enough or the grades were not good enough or any one of a number of reasons. And the developer and also the service area, neither one can do anything about those situations because of the right-of-way issues. And I would like to see you maybe consider something along those lines for the borough, having the power to go into these safety areas and address those. And then I'd also like to talk about the fact that the service areas that are there now, the smaller service areas, the 1 or 2 mile service areas, or even the 8 or 10 house service areas, are paying such an exorbitant rate to the borough for administrative fees relative to their budgets. And a service area that may have $250,000 worth of operating capital is paying the same fee that a service area that might only have $8,000 or $10,000 is paying, and it happens to be $970. And I realize that's down from $1,500 where it used to be, but still, I wonder why, where the equity is in that scenario. And the other thing is about the uneven tax rates and combining service areas that do not share the same burden of financial burden, so to speak, through the tax mill. If you combine those two service areas, what do you tell the guy that's running the plow? Hey, do the first mile really good, and then, you know, those people at the end, they really don't care, so, you know, just make it so they can get through. And so that bothers me. And I guess that's really about all I have to say.
Thank you, Mike. Senator Phillips will answer your questions now.
I'll try to. Mike, this obviously these hearings are exchange of information. A lot of those questions, you know, I almost hate to say this, but it has to be settled at the local government level. Your second to last point about the high cost, administrative cost, I'm going to pass this information on to you, and then you guys can do what you want. In the Chugiak Eagle River area, we have about 150, 200 miles of real roads, and then we have another surplus of 50 miles that's being worked on. We have one member from each of the community councils, there's five of them, that serve as the board of directors. We have three paid people, municipal people, one staff support person, a foreman, an assistant foreman, and the rest of the stuff's contracted out for road improvements, for the capital side, and then the maintenance and operations side. And it's working out very, very fine. No complaints. People are paying 2.1 mil in their taxes, 1.1 for maintenance, and another mil for capital. And believe me, the community councils are well represented on this road board. The five of them go through each of the community council for their priorities, and then they set up a priority for the whole community. So that's how we do it. A lot of the problems you described, we went through that about 15 years ago. The community basically got together and decided that we need to have a better system, which they did, and they taxed themselves and set up the system. I just want to pass this information on to you. You could use the Chugach Eagle River Road Board as a model to follow.
Are there any other questions of the committee members or Mike at this time? Thank you very much for testifying. We have noted all your comments. The next person signed up is Mr. Ladd McBride. Are you there online?
Yes, sir.
Would you care to give your testimony on House Bill 133, please?
Yes, sir. You said I'm Ladd McBride. I'm chairman of the Cripple Creek Road Service Area, which is located southwest of Fairbanks proper. I'd like to let you fellows know that I do support HB 133, which would allow both entities to vote on an annexation, allow differential tax level for unlike areas. The only problem of it is I think that would necessitate our maintaining a dual set of books for maintenance purposes. In our case, we found that larger does not necessarily mean cheaper, especially when it comes to reaction time to get the work done. We presently have a contractor who cannot handle, or has shown that he cannot handle the 90 miles of road he has to work with now, which may precipitate our having to go out for another contractor this coming spring. So these are things to keep in mind when you go out and get the private sector to do the work for you. Are they able to handle the work in a timely manner? That's all I have.
Thank you very much, Mr. McBride. Are there any questions to committee members at this time? Hearing none, we'll go to the next person signed up. Mrs. Nancy Webb, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Would you care to testify on House Bill 133, please?
I would. Thank you very much. I'm also a member of the Borough Assembly here in Fairbanks, and I'm into my second term, and I can tell you it's very difficult as a local elected official to sit there in front of neighborhoods that come in on this issue and tell them, recite to them what we must do to follow state law when they have such strongly held feelings about the fairness issue related to this topic. And I have come around to feel that this is a good idea to try to do this, and I'll be very interested to see if the legislature passes this, what we'll see in a year or two as far as consolidation. I have the view that consolidation is what we must do here at Fairbanks and work out these difficulties such as Mr. McBride just mentioned. But I think it is possible. And in my view, passage of this bill, along with the revenue sharing component to a gas tax increase that's being discussed, I understand, in House Bill 59. Those two would be tools, I think, that you could give us where we could try to encourage our constituents to come together and have larger service areas. I'm very interested in Senator Phillips' comments about Eagle River. I think our service areas are the closest thing we have to community councils, to tell you the truth. And perhaps we can look at models like that, but we need the tools to encourage people to make this adjustment. So I think that pretty much spells out my support here. Thank you.
Senator Phillips,
the reason I'm bringing this up because, you know, a lot of the stuff you're talking about, we went through this, and it was a lot of pain. Believe me, a lot of pain. But the last 4 or 5 years, things are just moving hunky-dory. People are really happy with their service. They're willing to pay the tax because they see what the service is being done for. So if you want to give me a call, I can give you some more details, and maybe you can pick up parts of it for your community and see what it fits for you. But I can tell you, 15 years ago, we were very much in the same predicament that you're in right now, where neighbors are fighting among each other and nothing's getting done. So am I right on that?
Well... It's definitely contentious, that's
okay.
For sure. And I appreciate your offer. I will take
it. Yeah, just give me a call. I'll, you know, you can look into it, and then you can do whatever you want with it.
Thank you.
Any additional questions of committee members? Hearing none, next person to sign up is William Green. Are you online?
Yeah, yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
Okay, if you could please give your testimony on House Bill 133.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity. I'll make it as brief as I possibly can. I'm the Deputy Municipal Attorney for the Municipality of Anchorage, and we appreciate the situation that Fairbanks finds itself in. However, the Fairbanks Borough is a second-class general law borough, and this bill adversely affects the Municipality of Anchorage as a home rule municipality. This bill, except for Section 4, which deals with a differential taxation within a service area, this bill was before the legislature in 1998 as Senate Bill 208 and House Bill 365. At that time, the Anchorage Municipal Assembly passed a resolution strongly opposing both bills, and excuse me, and I believe I also testified at the same time. The opposition from the Municipality of Anchorage comes from the fact that the bill as written is a mandatory imposition of restrictions on local home rule powers, which Fairbanks, being a second-class borough and looking for tools to use, have restrictions that the Municipality of Anchorage does not. So as for imposition on a home rule municipality, it reduces the constitutional purpose of maximizing local self-government. If the voters in the Municipality of Anchorage wish to change their present system, they have the means and wherewithal to do so through a change to their present charter provisions governing these issues on how you deal with service areas. So essentially, what the Municipality of Anchorage position is, it opposes the bill simply because it reduces and undermines the home rule powers of the municipality and doesn't feel that it is necessary in order for Anchorage to have the flexibility that Fairbanks is requesting in order to solve the local service area issues. I'll be glad to try to answer any questions if the committee has any.
Thank you very much. Senator Phillips has a question before we go to the prime sponsor.
Now we're going to expose the dirty laundry for Anchorage here. Let me ask you, you said the municipality, the assembly voted on this one way or the other. Is that correct?
Yes, Senator. That was, but not on this particular bill, on the Senate Bill 208 and House Bill 365, which are virtually identical to the current House Bill 133, except for the current Section 4, which deals with the differential taxation within individual service areas.
Okay, and then our assembly people from Chugach, Eagle River, how do they vote on that?
Senator, I'm sorry, I should have gotten that vote tally, and I didn't. I can tell you is that the resolution, Anchorage Assembly Resolution Number 98-72, was passed by the assembly at that time. I'd be glad to look up and see how it was voted on.
Well, I can already tell you, our two guys voted no on it. So for those guys around the state, we have about 32,000 people in Chugach, Eagle River, and this is sort of a bone of contention of self-determination here. Yeah, but it's not your fight, it's our fight. But our problem is that from our perspective is that you have the greater part of Anchorage mandating what we ought to do out in Chugach and Eagle River. Our folks are saying we got to have self-determination. And I do know that this legislation is supported by our two assembly people.
Thank you, Senator. Just obviously this is going to be an area where I'd like to say reasonable people can disagree.
We do.
But when you bring up the charter, that's never stood in Anchorage's way before when they choose to abrogate whatever portions of the charter they wish to. But let me just add that should you think we're plowing new ground here, while this bill does limit the power of assemblies and gives the people gives these powers to the people who are being taxed, I would like to remind you that the concept of limiting these powers is not new. We're already in statute under home rule limitations. There's some 53 limitations on local governments in terms of what they can and cannot do to and on the behalf of citizens. So certainly Anchorage would like to have more power. Some of us, as the senator from Eagle River has indicated, that more power for any government entity is not necessarily better.
Now, Mr. Green, since neither of those were really questions, but they were statements, would you like to comment on it before we go on? Well, before you do, we do have, maybe we have a question here. Senator Elton, please.
Well, I may be somewhat confused here, Mr. Chair.
But you are.
Mr. Green, I mean, I guess the question for me is, if this bill passes, what happens to police protection on the hillside?
I can answer that if you'd like.
I would. Let Mr. Green give a run at it since he's with the city.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think if this bill passes, anything would happen with the exercise of police powers on the hillside. That's already been done. It's now in a single service area. So I don't think this bill would affect the hillside police issue.
And, Mr. Chairman, I concur. That issue's been through the courts, and it is in its final resolution.
That is my understanding, too.
So if I could follow up and maybe with the sponsor or Mr. Green. So there are no new powers being given to service areas that would allow them to revisit that decision?
That's correct.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's correct. That's my understanding as well.
Unless you wanted to amend it to do that.
And I'm not aware of any proposition that's on the, for consideration, and that's
yes, Senator Phillips.
Not so much to answer Senator Elton's question. Our fear is that you have the greater part of Anchorage mandating, and I'll just use our community, Chugach Eagle, we're mandating certain services that we really don't want, or maybe we want them. And they're telling us what to do, and that's the problem that we're having. And this fight's been going on ever since the borough started, the old borough started years ago. So we still want to retain that self-determination.
All right. Well, we've got five other people here that are waiting.
Sorry,
yes, Senator.
Because I do need some help.
Yeah.
And other people, we don't have an experience with service areas
right.
anymore.
Right.
I mean, I understand what you're saying, but it seems to me that that's a battle that needs to be fought between the voters in the borough and the borough. And that, I guess my philosophical problem is here we have the state stepping in and weighing in on one side rather than letting it be resolved at the local level.
Basically, I see this bill as being the state as being the referee because, you know, we're outnumbered. We only represent 15% of the total population. There's no way you can beat them back.
You've identified the situation. You're both correct. And that's why we're here. The sponsor before, should I go on to the next person here? And
well, just to add, if I might, Mr. Chairman, that it is the tyranny of the majority that we're a little concerned about. And if that's an interesting balancing act that we're addressing here, should Anchorage, where it has the majority of voters in the entire state, be able to decide all issues for the entire state, including Juneau? Or should Juneau have a vote that is equal to the municipality?
Normally, Anchorage? That would be a very compelling argument.
Right. Would you like to add a capital move to this?
The next person that we have online signed up is Mr. Scott Sell. Are you on the line? Scott Sell, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Would you like to testify on House Bill 133, please?
Yes, I would. My name is Scott Sell. I'm one of the Board of Supervisors for Birch Tree Elmore Limited Road Service Area, and I am at the present Vice President of Rabbit Creek Community Council. When this all started, our limited road service area started with Sean Parnell to try to get something like this going. And we supported it then. We still support it now. We fully back it. We think it is going to be something good because in the Anchorage area, there's been nasty rumors going around the assembly, and some of the assembly people want to get rid of the limited road service areas and charge the individuals, the people in the limited road service areas, a higher tax. for less service, and we are not in favor of that. That's why we want to keep what we have, because the job is getting done and getting done in a very expeditiously manner and everything. The Rabbit Creek Community Council has also been a supporter of this, or the two prior bills and of the current one now, and always has been. They would like to see it get passed, and that I think as far as the community council, if this was intact years ago, then the municipality could have had a harder time forcing police service on some of the areas that they did. The attorney was talking about the charter. Well, they seem to have thrown that on out when it came to changing service areas, so we're not in favor of that. So both of the groups that I represent are fully in favor of having this one passed.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the committee members? Thank you very much for your testimony. The next person I have on my list is Preston Williams. Are you online? Preston Williams?
Yes, I'm online.
Would you care to testify in House Bill 133?
Yes, I would. I'm for House Bill 133. I'll start out that way anyway. And I think it's a good way to let people have the right to vote on their areas. I have an objection with the last sentence in C, section AS 29.35.50. The last section says this subsection does not apply to fire service protection areas. And I've been a board member of a fire service area for 23 years. And I'm in an area where we used to have a road service area. We had five of them. And the assembly chose to merge all five of them, and we had five elected boards, and the assembly changed it to one appointed board without a vote of the people. So I'm kind of for going to this new 133 bill, but I need an amendment added because for some reason the fire departments have been left out. And there's a lot of service areas that are in fire departments in the boroughs, and it'd be really bad to have one service area annex another without a vote of the people in the areas. I don't know quite why, as a fire service area, we were left out of the bill.
Mr.
Thank you. Senator Phillips has a question.
I agree with the gentleman. So.
Well, we will.
Senator, point out a good point too. I didn't see.
Yes, I have an amendment to take care of that. We can discuss
okay.
it.
Mr. Chairman, if I might. Respond to that very briefly and then suggest that Mayor Williams has some comments about the fire service area as well that might be germane whenever you would like to.
Sure, when we get to that point, we will. I'd like to get through the testimonies first. Mr. Brooke Chandler is the next one on my list. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Would you care to testify in House Bill 133, please?
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Brooks Chandler. I am the chairman of the Girdwood Board of Supervisors. Girdwood is a service area not only for road maintenance services, but also for fire protection services, which were accomplished in our valley through a volunteer fire department, and for parks and recreation services as well within Girdwood. We support this bill as a community because it allows us a greater degree of protection from our big brother to the north, who, for whatever reason in the future, might decide that municipal employees rather than independent contractors should be the ones that are plowing our streets, and might decide that paid full-time firefighters rather than our volunteer force would somehow be better at providing us fire protection, or should desire to establish some branch office of Parks and Recreation within Girdwood. We enjoy the degree of independence that we have as a service area, including the discretion to request certain amounts to be included in our budget to give us the level of services that we want to have, and that degree of local control, I think, is very special, especially with a community like mine that is so geographically distinct from the rest of Anchorage and historically was its own independent city prior to unification. And if you talk to any of the old-timers in Girdwood about what was happening at the time of unification, they will tell you that they thought that they had a very explicit political deal that if, in fact, Girdwood was unified with Anchorage, that we would never, never be required to accept services from outside the community without our explicit consent by way of a vote. And so we were very dismayed to see that promise ignored in the recent dispute regarding police services on the hillside. And we regard this bill as a way, as needed protection in the law to honor the political promise that was made to our community many years ago. I do have one comment with regard to the last section of Section 3, which I think the prior person was also wondering about. We are a fire service protection area, and I think we would desire to have that last sentence eliminated if it was intended to carve out some exception for those services. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are any questions of the committee members at this time? Senator Phillips?
I just want to let him know, this gentleman from Girdwood, I want to let him know that I'm concerned about it because we have the Chugiak Volunteer Fire Department as well as Southport.
Okay. And for anybody that's testified, please stay online so that you'll be able to hear the entire committee process as we go through that. Any additional questions of committee members? Hearing none, the next person that we have is Larry Sodom. Are you online? Have I pronounced that right? Larry, are you online?
Okay. I'm here now.
Good. Would you like to testify on House Bill 133, please?
Yeah, my name is Larry Soden. I'm a road commissioner for the Edenilla Heights service area here in Fairbanks. Have been since the service area was created some 10 or 12 years ago. And I guess I would like to testify in favor of this bill also. We've kind of gone back and forth on this issue a number of times in the years that I've been involved in this process. And in fact, my service area, when it was created, was initially intended to be added on to an adjoining service area, which at that time had just been the recipient of a huge grant from the state to upgrade their roads, including paving, and they didn't want to add us because our roads are unpaved. Over the years, however, it's probably turned out to be a blessing in disguise for us because I think we found that overall, by managing our own budget and approving within our own service area, the way we spend the money both for maintenance and for improvements, our residents have been pretty happy with the level of service that they're getting. We do tax ourselves right now approximately $1 million, and we don't have a lot of money, but what we have we're able to use to cover our needs. And I think that no matter which way we go on this, it's typical that we're not going to please everybody, but I think by giving road service areas, both existing ones and potential new ones, the maximum flexibility to decide for themselves not only how they want to be instated, but also how they want to be taxed for the level of service they receive is going to be a step forward. So I'm in favor of House Bill 133.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of the committee members? Thank you for your testimony. The next person that I have online is Daniel Gregory. Daniel, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Would you care to testify on House Bill 133, please?
Yes, I would.
And give your affiliation.
I'm Daniel Gregory. I'm with the Nikiski Fire Department representing Chief Bill Harris. And I would like to speak to this House bill as far as in support of the concept of the bill and the idea, other than, again, in Section 3 about the fire service areas. I think that the fire service areas, as much as any of the service areas within any of the boroughs, are very much a part of those communities, and they need the same protection and the same opportunity to share in this bill. And that's my comment.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next person that I have online is Tim Bigerain. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Tim Bigerain.
Okay, thank you for correcting it. Would you please testify in House Bill 133, please?
Yeah, I'm Tim Bigerain, Fire Chief at North Star Fire in the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I was in favor of the bill until what I hear starting to happen, and that's the changing of the bill. I testified back when this bill was up before. I have a major concern when I start to look at a large service area. I cover 85 square miles now with about 6,000 lots. In that 6,000 lots, say 3,000 of those lots are developed. I annexed an area last fall through a process of the public wanting to come in, putting a petition together, going in front of the Service Area Commission, explaining the purpose, reason, and us reviewing to see if we could actually provide the protection. From there, I went to the Borough Assembly for an approval of a vote, and the public wanting to come in voted. At all times, everybody had in our service area an opportunity to come forth and give testimony one way or the other. It did work out in favor. I am now going to be faced with a decision of trying to provide a basic level of service, if this is going to be changed to include fire protection, over dollars. I have a road, Moon Mullen Lane, off Chena Hot Springs, that when it was annexed in a year ago, had no housing. One side of that road, due to trying to keep everything in a square plot type format in a large service area, was annexed in. On the opposite side, now three homes have been built. My current mill rate would bring in about $300 a year, though the cost to do an election for me would run right around $3,000. At a 10-year payoff, it's going to be very hard for us to approve to provide protection to a small minority that wants to come in and basically start to look at denying levels of services over economics. That's where I stand. I did support the bill as written, and will state if it's going to be changed, no support.
Thank you. The next, any questions, the committee member, Senator Green?
Yes. I would just, could you make it clear to me, I'm not sure I understood why you no longer support the bill. Is it because it's not a multiple area tax that's divided by each group, and now it would be each group taxed differentially?
Yes, I'm listening to the testimony, and I'm hearing senators come back saying that they're interested in changing and amending the bill. As the bill was written that I had in front of me, it was fine. With the fire service area excluded, if it's going to be changed, we would be against it.
Okay,
thank you. Thank you. I just misunderstood you.
Okay, the next person, I'm not sure if I got to pronounce Nadeline Hargesmeyer.
It's Nadine Hargesmeyer.
Please continue on House Bill 133.
I'm with the Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor's Office, and I won't take too much of your time. I want to repeat the borough's support for the bill and also the strong support for the exemption for fire services. For fire service areas. You just heard Chief Begain's testimony, and I just wanted to repeat that general support for the bill as it's written, and that the exemption for fire service areas is good, and if that's removed, that would be sort of problematic for us. Thank you.
Thanks. Is there any questions for the committee members? Next person that we have online, hearing none, is Jack Brown. Are you there, Jack?
Hi, Senator. Thanks for listening to us today. Just wanted to mention that I'm a borough assemblyman from the Kenai Peninsula Borough. I represent the Nikiski, Salamantov, Tionic, Beluga area. Within my assembly district, there are five service areas. My read on this bill is an excellent bill. I think it allows people to pay for the level of government they want. I like the flexibility of the bill. As I read it, it allows people to support consolidation or not. A number of years ago, as Preston Williams mentioned, our road service areas were consolidated. And I can tell you, as a person that has to authorize the money, as you have to with the state budget, we spent $200,000 out of their savings a couple years ago. We're going to be asked to spend over $400,000 out of their savings this year. So clearly, at this point, I believe consolidation did not work. And for that reason, I do support, as Mr. Williams has pointed out, the deletion in Section 3 of the verbiage, this subsection does not apply to fire service protection areas. Our fire department is probably one of the finest in the state. When I was first on the assembly, there was an effort to consolidate all the fire departments. So I believe that this section, definitely this sentence has to come out of there. And I do appreciate the sponsor of this bill. I think it's an excellent bill, and it will help people that live outside the city.
Thank you very much. Any questions, committee members? Hearing none. Is there anybody online that has not testified that I don't have the name of? Hearing none. Is there anybody in the committee room that has signed up or wants to testify? Okay. Representative Bundy, any closing comments there before we...
Yeah, if I might. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it. I just want to reiterate that that the police protection issue is a done deal, but some people viewed it as kind of a shot across the bow for other limited services and would like that opportunity to have a choice in service that comes before them. The municipality of Anchorage is, of course, against this bill. From their perspective, local assembly should be able to determine decisions by ordinance. I, however, and I think the people that have testified, their perspective is if you're going to assess and tax someone for a service, they ought to have a vote in the issue. And there is that ongoing challenge in Alaska between the 800-pound gorilla and the, person who's dispensing the bananas. And at what point should the just a clear majority prevail, and should there then be sub-units? Just to review very briefly what the bill does, it strengthens current statute that describes a voting mechanism. If a local assembly wants to abolish a service area, it will require a majority vote of those people within the service area. If an assembly wants to alter the boundaries, it requires a vote of the people affected as well as the majority surrounding it. And if assembly wants to combine areas, it requires a majority of votes of both entities affected. To address very briefly the fire service issue, I feel like I should be quoting Ron Larson here. Some of my friends like this and some don't, and I agree with my friends. The people in Fairbanks have expressed some very some concerns, as was it articulated, about the cost of having these rather frequent small elections, and is that the most is that to the best of people? Road service have high O&M costs, and a fire service is a matter of serving two or three more homes doesn't have the local tax impact that if you're going to absorb 20 more miles of road. There is, as I've said, a point of view from Nikiski that I'm sensitive to and appreciative of, and a point of view of Fairbanks. I have to say it doesn't impact my district, and I'll leave it to the wisdom of the committee of how we sort this out. I don't know if I have heard, and I'll let Mayor Williams speak for himself, that they do have a facility in Kenai at this point that requires a vote before fire service areas be changed. Whether that needs to be strengthened or not, again, I'll leave that to for him to speak to.
Thank you. Before you leave the table, do you know whether or not the Anchorage Caucus or the Anchorage Assembly is going to take a position on this bill? Because old positions kind of are old positions. Mr. Green had brought up an old one, but do you know if this is on the agenda for the assembly now to take a position?
Not to my knowledge, Mr. Chairman. And Anchorage Caucus has a meeting coming up here in the near future,
yeah.
But it won't be in time to discuss this. It would, I suppose, as the bill moves through the process.
All right, thank you. Any other questions, committee members? Hearing none, the bill is before us. Senator Phillips?
Chairman, I'm going to move on page 2, lines 17 and 18, starting where this subsection does not apply to fire service protection areas. And I'll just speak from my side of the Anchorage area. We have two volunteer fire departments. One was Chugiak Volunteer Fire Department, the other one Southport Valley Fire Department. And I do know that this is going to be a problem, at least in my area. And the reason for it is self-determination. We have two good fire departments that are doing quite well. And if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And our problem is this 800-pound gorilla coming right at us, trying to get the banana.
Motion is before us. Page 2, slide 17 and 18, delete this subsection, does not apply to a fire service protection area. Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the amendment is adopted. We now have the bill before us. What's the pleasure of the committee?
Mr. Chair, maybe you'd indulge me a little bit.
Absolutely.
If you could get Mayor Williams to
approach. I asked him, Mayor Williams, do you want to testify, sir?
I'm just curious, Mr. Chair, Mayor Williams is one of the few people in the room that has executive experience at a different level, and I'd be interested in his viewpoint.
Thank you very much, Senator Elton, and thank the committee for holding the hearing on this. I was somewhat puzzled by the bill when it was first presented to me. My first reaction is somewhat Representative Phillips, Senator Phillips' bill.
Give me a promotion.
I told him his hair is going to turn white if he stays here. And that is the local home rule thing. It seems to me that we're always looking for better ways to allow local government to handle its own concerns. And of course, anything that appears to be a mandate, an unfunded mandate against local government, we're always on the watch for, speaking generally for all of the mayors throughout the state. I was secondly concerned about the rule, the subsection applying to the fire service protection area, and questioned why it was that was needed. I now understand more clearly that there are areas in the state who do not have in place already that type of mechanism to protect them without a vote. I think that's the part I'm still confused over as to whether or not taking that out or leaving it in would make the big difference with regard. And I can understand that point too. It is somewhat moot, and I find myself in a difficult position because I am the mayor of a first-class home rule city with a charter and all the abilities to do all of our own local government that we can possibly do, and it would not necessarily affect us unless an adjoining area came to us in favor of the borough to offer up services and fire protection, and that seems to be the only area that it would actually affect me. So, not to seem to chicken out on the whole thing, but I'm going to leave the decision up to those who it directly applies to rather than to me. So, thank you very much.
Appreciate your testifying, Mr. Mayor, and thank you for coming down this week. Is there any additional questions of committee members at this time? No. What is the pleasure of the committee, Senator Phillips?
Chairman, I'll move HB 133 out of this committee and to the there's no next committee referral.
As amended.
As amended.
As there is an objection, roll call.
Senator Green?
Yes.
Senator Elton?
No.
Senator Phillips?
Yes.
Chairman Ward?
Yes. It has moved out of committee with individual recommendations as amended. The next thing that we have before us is confirmation, and I'm not sure if Andrea Jacobson, are you online?
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Con. I'll talk to you later on.
Loretta?
Yeah.
There's a confirmation later.
Oh, I'll talk to you later.
She was supposed to be. She hasn't
heard words.
She hasn't shown up.
Okay.
Really?
Andrea Jacobs, Alaska Public Office Commission. We will hold her to the next meeting. She wanted.
Yeah, I just, Mr. Chairman, I do have one question for her.
Yeah, she's supposed to be online. I don't know what happened.
The question is, why would anybody want to be on it?
Well,
well,
actually, we do have her resume here.
Yeah, I saw that, but it doesn't say why.
Yeah, it doesn't say why she wants to be on it. And with that, we'll hold it till next time so where she can come online.
I'd like to talk.
I'm not quite sure what happened with the sunspot. With that, Senate Bill 262 is before us, and this is, I happen to know this one. Loretta, would you mind going forward and telling us what this bill is? This is an act relating to motor vehicle license plates for disabled people, and we actually have a person online that wants to testify on it. Could you please give an overview to the committee as what this bill is and why it's here?
Okay. My name's Loretta Brown. I'm a staffer for Senator Ward. We got a call a few weeks ago from a gentleman that he is disabled. He was in an accident, and his car was totaled when he decided to lease a vehicle rather than purchase a vehicle. And then he was not allowed to put his personal handicap license plate on the leased vehicle. And that's what the background of why this bill was asked. He asked us to look into it. It says that this, I'll just read the sponsor statement. At this time, a leased vehicle is considered owned by a commercial entity. The commercial entity is considered the legal owner. The handicapped and or disabled veterans plates are exempt from paying both the registration fees and taxes. Therefore, fees, free plates may not be used in conjunction with a commercially owned vehicle, and that's the way it stands now. SB 262 adds the words or lease and or owned or leased to Section 1 AS 2810-181D and to Section 2 AS 2810-421D3. Adding this language will allow handicapped and or disabled veterans to place their license plates on their leased personal vehicle.
Okay, would you like to tell the committee about the cost that's associated with this?
Yes. I don't have my notes, so I'll speak from memory here. There was an added note to the fiscal note that there's like 5,500, I believe, registered vehicles to disabled persons in the state. The gentleman that did the analysis said that 20% of new vehicles or vehicles that come off of a lot are leased, and then he applied this 20% to the disabled population. I disagreed with that. He actually had no backup that I could see. He was just making an assumption that this these numbers could apply to that, and that's where they came up with the fiscal note.
Senator Phillips.
Eventually, I'm going to see this bill in Senate Finance along with Senator Green. Let me get this straight. When you ask, the guy was saying that 20% of all cars purchased are leased, right?
Yes.
And he's assuming all 20% are going to be handicapped? Is that
what
I hear?
No, he's applying that same formula that of 5,500 vehicles that are owned by disabled people, 20% of them are going to be leased. And so he is seeing that there is $158 registration fee that they're going to be losing that, because at this point the commercial vehicle person, the people that own, that lease the vehicle, pay those fees, and a disabled person doesn't have to, is exempt from that.
And if I can, because when I talk to this person and another person, they told me that they actually thought that they own the vehicle because it's got an option to purchase at the end of it.
In the contracts, in the leasing contract.
But now the department says that's not true. They have no ownership in it, even though the reason they bought a lease vehicle because there was no down payment, you can just start making payments and drive away.
Sure.
And we may start seeing more of this. But the department has taken this position that this is not an owned vehicle, even though there's an option to purchase at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them felt that they did own this,
yeah.
At least the one that I talked to for sure did, because the salesman told them that he would at the end. So there seems to be a little bit of a conflict here. However, it's the note itself has $173,000 loss of revenue,
mm-hmm.
which is of great concern to the sponsor. It absolutely is. We do have a gentleman online. We only have one person to testify. Could we go to this person and then we can... Chuck, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
Please state your name and who you're with and to testify on House Bill 262, please.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, my name is Chuck Hosack, and I'm the Deputy Director of Division of Motor Vehicles. And as some of the testimony has said, under Alaska statutes, responsibility for paying registration fees and taxes is placed on the owner of the vehicle. Now, lease vehicles are owned by a commercial company that makes money by letting others use its vehicles. And as such, the owner pays commercial fees the same as any other commercial vehicle, such as rental cars, taxis, company-owned vehicles. This distinction as a commercial vehicle is often overlooked when those who lease a vehicle may be using it as a family car or may, whenever the lease is over, purchase a vehicle from the leasing company. The person leasing a vehicle has no ownership right or interest in the vehicle, and the vehicle would not be registered in their name. It's registered in the name of the owner of the leasing company. Since the person leasing the vehicle is just using the vehicle, the state does not place any requirement on that person to pay fees, nor does the state charge that person anything. In a lease, all costs can be negotiated just as they can when purchasing a vehicle. Now, with leases, it's become normal practice to have the lessee pay the registration fees for the leasing company. This is a contractual arrangement between the person leasing the vehicle and the commercial leasing company over the total cost of the lease. State has no part in these negotiations, just as it has no part in the negotiations when the person is buying a vehicle. This bill is directing DMV to eliminate a fee that's actually not charged to the individual. What the bill does, in effect, is exempt the leasing company from paying the registration fees, and this creates an inequity in fees between this company and other commercial vehicles, and that's where DMV has a problem and opposes the bill. Now, if these individuals want the license plates on there for parking privilege, we have another provision where they can get at no charge a handicap parking permit, which is hung from their rear view mirror, can be placed in any vehicle and allows them to have the parking privileges that anybody with a qualifying disability can get. Now, in the fiscal note, I did not include any operating costs since the state already registers these vehicles in another form. If this bill were to go through, there would be some added complexity to the registration system, since we would have to identify these vehicles separately from all other commercial vehicles. Now, there will be a revenue loss if these companies are exempted from paying the higher fees. As there's been some discussion, it's difficult to determine the exact extent since we don't know who's leasing or how many handicapped people are actually leasing vehicles. And to estimate the impact, I did take the total number of registrations of handicapped individuals, 5,500, and information from the auto industry. And I was trying to update that this morning, and as of 98, it's actually about 30% the vehicles leaving the showroom are lease vehicles as opposed to 70% purchase. So the the leasing program is growing in popularity, but I stuck with a more conservative figure. 20% of the number of persons with disabilities who might lease a vehicle. I used, kept with the lower figure because not all would purchase or lease new vehicles, but I have to assume that the trends among persons with disabilities will mirror the trends in the general population when purchasing or leasing a vehicle. I recognize there may be some disagreement on the amount because it's based on trends rather than specific data, but I do believe that there will be a loss of revenue, and my figures will reflect that. And that concludes my testimony, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you. I do have a question. Maybe you could help me sort through this. The gentleman that I'm thinking of was injured in World War II defending this country, and maybe you don't, but I can understand that he says he has a hard time remembering his glasses sometimes, which I don't know how he drives, but he still does, and he says this little piece of paper thing, he forgets it, and he wants to know why he can't put his license plates, his disability license plates on the car that the salesman told him he's going to end up owning at the end. It's just kind of a straight question. I didn't want to lose $200,000 worth of revenue, but it seems like a situation that it is there. So there is no ownership in your mind, even though there's an option to purchase. Is that correct? How do you disallow the option to purchase?
Well, we don't disallow it, but that's an option that comes into play at the end of the lease. Right now, they don't own the vehicle. They're making payments to the leasing company, and the leasing company holds the title to the vehicle.
And do they have any interest in the title with the option to purchase?
No, none at all.
That's interesting. Senator Green.
You know, I can't remember one time in our lives when we leased a car, and I think that the ability to turn it back unilaterally is what distinguishes it from having been purchased. And that's what they're talking about. I think that's what's at issue.
Uh-huh.
And that's what allows you, in some instances, to if you have a major problem with the leased vehicle, I think you have the ability to turn it back in and not be responsible necessarily for the repairs, whereas if you owned it and were paying it out on time. I may be wrong on that, but I think that has something to do with the distinguishing differences.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Any other questions of committee members?
Just an observation, Mr. Chair. I do know that if you're leasing a vehicle, it's not your asset, as it would be if I were purchasing a vehicle on a time payment. I mean, I would own a component of that vehicle. It would be my asset. That's not the case with the lease vehicle.
And how does that schedule work on a leasing vehicle?
I don't think it does. I think it would come into play at the end of the lease if the person who had signed the lease and was leasing a vehicle then negotiates a purchase with the owner of the vehicle, and that purchase would, in most cases, indicate a high percentage of their lease payments would have gone toward the purchase of the car, and when they purchased that car, that would be their asset, what they had.
I understand that. However, I think there's some people in the public, at least one veteran that I'm thinking of, believes that he has some ownership in this leased vehicle, it's maybe something that we can't fix. I don't know. I don't know that it is, but I wanted to bring it at least to this level. Senator Green.
I want to know, too, if there is not a different level of liability for the person leasing a car than there is for the person owning the car.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Because I think the title holder would be probably collecting a fee
for the insurance on the vehicle, but I can't imagine that the title holder or the leasing company can cannot continue to be at risk. I'm not sure, but that may be part of that.
Yeah, and maybe this was just a certain salesman that told these people that, oh, this will be okay. You know, it's just like owning one. You know, I really don't know that. But, however, we still have a disabled person that can't park and get inside of stores. And, you know, how do we punish him because he can't remember his little thing, you know?
Could there be, like, a sticker you could put on the window?
Did you hear the question, Chuck?
Stick-on thing.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I did. We don't have a sticker. In fact, we've gone away from the old placard we used to put in the windows. The hanging handicap is a universal one that's used throughout the United States, so that what we do in Alaska will be recognized in every state, plus those people coming from outside vacationing up here can use the handicap placards issued by their state. There isn't anything that would prevent it, but most of the law enforcement agencies are looking for the hanging placard now.
Senator Green?
Well, I know. Last summer I was with my mother in Texas, and she has one of the placards that hang from the window. And there was some kind of rule there, and maybe it's national, that when you're not parked, you have to remove that placard from the rearview mirror or wherever you have it hung. Is that true here as well?
There is no specific rule on that. Our regulations on general vehicle equipment say the windshield must be uncluttered or words to that effect. So when it is hanging, it blocks your view on a certain part of the windshield. So we recommend that you take it off while you're driving.
But it's not a law or a regulation. You won't receive a ticket for it.
That is correct. You will not receive a ticket for it.
Thank you.
Senator Elton. Thanks. Chuck, what happens if a person, in this case the veteran that the chair is referring to, what happens if they take some scotch tape and tape it to a corner of the windshield?
Nothing.
It still works even though it's not hanging from the rearview mirror?
That's correct. Just as long as it's displayed and the law enforcement people can see that, putting it on the side of the windshield, it's a fairly long permit. It's about 7 inches long by about 2.5 inches wide. But if you put it on the edge of the windshield, that should solve his problem.
Okay, any additional questions? Could you write a letter to me and state in there in very simple terms that no person that leases a vehicle in the state of Alaska has any ownership in it, so I can distribute that to the car dealerships so this doesn't happen again?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I certainly can.
Okay, and maybe it just might be misinformation on a salesman part. Senator Phillips?
I was going to suggest maybe DMV can send a bulletin to all car dealers. I'm sure they deal with
that. That would probably be much better if they would do that, yeah, instead of me doing it. Maybe you could make up a draft of what you could send to all the dealers, and we could talk about this a little bit, Chuck, okay?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. The Dealers Association does have a quarterly newsletter, and we contribute to that, and that's one way of getting the word out, too.
Wait, my boss is trying to tell me something.
I know. On it, and they predict that revenue would increase if rental cars or lease cars were allowed to put the specialty plates on.
Yeah, the lease cars is something that is changing the whole dynamics here, because there are a whole group of people that really don't understand, and I could tell from the two that contacted me and the other ones, they really do believe that they have an ownership in this, and that this is just a way of buying it. A statement from you that an option to purchase, regardless of what is said or analyzed, is considered no ownership and no legal ownership, then that would go a long ways.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, we can do that.
Okay. With that, I intend on holding this bill.
and we will take it from there. And with that, State Affairs is adjourned.
Jerry, you solved this problem. I can still use it.